Well, was anyone yelling at you on the internet? Was it just like someone?
No,
came
no, somebody
you?
In IRL. As the
IRL, yeah, yeah.
Press 10, and someone was like, "Oh, you might want to."
Yeah, you might not want to wear that. So, oh, I'll just go topless for the rest of the day. Oh, fuck it, man. I'll just get my fucking midriff out now, man.
There's definitely more offensive shirts to download. Oh, yeah, I saw people wearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I suppose Jesus is a cunt is probably worse.
That's a big seller now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
good. I saw that everywhere. Yeah.
Bloody cradle of filth.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 209 of Sapnin Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards!
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and this episode is an algorithm to pathetic dreams, desperate pleasures, and flowers in your dustbin.
What was it? Was it prosthetic? Was the
prosthetic
word?
Dreams, oh, yeah. Right, cool.
I hope I make sense to you. This week's guest is the wonderful Henry of Boston Manor.
Yes, Mr. Eat Your Greens is back. Boston Manor, those Simpsons-loving alternative outcasts from the outskirts of Blackpool, have contributed a lot of buzz to this generation's UK emo and pop punk scenes over the last decade. They're a band constantly pushing themselves, breaking their own mold, and never trying to fit into any particular crowd. Their new album, Datura, is a perfect example of that. 7 tracks embracing their dark dusk side with their dawn to follow up expected in 2023. Henry is someone we've gotten to know pretty well since starting this podcast, so wanted to invite him on for his own solo episode to not only take a look at a lot of personal takes on the band, but insights behind his personal life and a lot of random conversations, if that's what you expect. But someone who's very humble, a quiet guy with a lot of passion for his music, Sean.
Yes, top chap. Very, very much enjoyed this. It was a quality conversation. It was good to hear everything that's going on with Boston Manor, has been going on with them, is going to go on with them. But it was also nice to hear Henry speak openly and freely about personal ups and downs and struggles. I think this was a very, very insightful episode into the lives of band members as well. So it was fantastic to have Blackpool's Finest on. I enjoyed it very, very much seeing him. Thanks again to him and his crew for being so lovely to us. We recorded this when we went down to speak to Alexa on Fire in Southampton. So this was a bonus for us, and this is a treat for you as well, because this is a great chat with a lovely, lovely, fucking fantastic, lovely, lovely, lovely chap.
Yes, it's so good to all get in a room together and just have random tangents and conversations and just kind of express different things and have a really relaxed atmosphere. I don't think it gets more relaxed than this conversation. And as Sean says, we talk a lot of different things from the ins and outs of the band, some of their biggest struggles coming back from releasing the album right as the pandemic started, to their origin story, bullying themselves behind the scenes, social media things, mental health. It all gets talked about on this podcast. So make sure to stay tuned throughout to listen, and they will be touring across the UK in December playing a lot of intimate shows. So head over to the website for all the details on that. And before we get into this conversation, a reminder, if you enjoy what we do, if you like these silly, silly talks, please head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sapnin for some extra bonus podcasts on there and getting to be included into a wonderful community of people that help us make this podcast each and every week. We couldn't do it without them. Give us a follow on at SapninPod on Twitter and Instagram. But without any further ado, this is Henry Cox of Boston Manor on episode 209 of Sapnin Podcast.
Yes, Twitter's on its fucking way out, don't it? Anyway.
Sapnin!
Fucking Elon, like, he's got to spoil it just because he's a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin.
Yes.
Right now we are joined by Henry of the fantastic Boston Manor. How are you, brother?
All the better for seeing you guys.
Oh, he's a liar.
We're a long way from South Wales, aren't we?
Yeah. I literally drove down today and I'm driving back after this.
That's crazy. Why this one? Why? We did play a Cardiff show.
I know.
Yeah, busy for both of us. We had things going on just in fall.
Yeah. Yeah, my girlfriend started a wedding business company, selfish bitch. So that I just happened to be on the same night as you guys in Cardiff. So
you got to be a good partner there. That's good.
Well,
thanks.
Well,
thanks.
Play this back to her. Yeah. And
apart from that bit where I said she was a selfish bitch. We were fucking busy and then we were told Alexis were not doing much press on the tour anyway. So they only invited us kind of like to this last one. Wade saw the name. I was
exclusivity,
like, cunts. I like cunts. Let's get cunts down here. So.
Did you ever tour with Alexis back in the day? I was wondering this when I'm...
Not with the Blackout, but I was talking to him earlier about it, and we were talking about like one of their first UK tours, which was like 2003, 2004. I was in another band called When Reason Sleeps, and we opened for Alex on Fire in Cardiff, maybe Birmingham? But yeah, nothing really... Oh, we did Warped Tour. They were on Warped Tour as well at the same time as us. And we had the same sound guy. But other than that, like, we never...
It's not crossed paths too much. Because I was thinking, actually, when I saw that I was doing this, I was thinking about the Blackout. And I was thinking, it probably hit all around a similar time, really. It was very much of a similar era, I feel like.
Well, that's what I found now. A problem I've got now is a lot of those bands who were all kind of doing okay and us at the same time, I missed out on because I was so in my bubble doing me that I wasn't checking out new bands or checking out the bands who were doing well at the same time. Like, it was just kind of I was in such a fucking blur that I didn't bother fucking check
happens anything. Though, doesn't it? Because yeah. sometimes the last thing you want to do is check out fucking music because you're just around music all the time, yeah. every day. So I get in little ruts like that sometimes. I don't know if you
and then
guys
your
do.
Music is better than yours, and you're like,
oh, for fuck's sake, man! Yeah. Not every band, surely it's not every band.
But it must be hard because when you're constantly thinking about what you're doing and the touring and your schedule and everything like that, it's hard to check out other music anyway, but especially of the similar scene. Because you just want to kind of switch off when you do have that downtime.
Yeah, I don't, if I'm total transparency, I don't really listen to a lot of music that's close to me in terms of the world that we occupy, the bubble that we're in. And that's not because I don't like it. It's just because I'm so sort of around it all the time. And I think also it's good when you're writing, and we're a band that kind of writes all the time, it's quite good to sort of have a bit of distance between anything that's contemporary, just because you don't really want to via osmosis steal people's
that
shit.
One of the things, that was one of the reasons why I kind of didn't look too much into other people, is because I didn't want to end up being like, oh, that's a good bit, we should
do
that.
Yeah, you gotta be careful. Yeah. Yeah.
Like the first time I heard fucking I did remember.
This shit is brilliant.
I can't. Why haven't I thought of singing the chunk? You fucking bell end. And I'm going, I was in a band for 10 years. I never thought once, boys, stop. And I'll go, gung, 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 gung. And then we all just fucking go mad. Like,
Well, it did something. It certainly worked
for them. But like, how was this tour being for you, being on the road with Axis on Fire now for quite a while? How's it just been?
It's been great. Yeah, they're really nice people. The shows have been insane. I think pretty much every show's been sold out, obviously. Getting to play to big rooms full of people that don't really know you, which is really good. You know, hopefully making some new fans and getting to play these magnificent rooms like this venue today. Google it if you're listening to this. It's Southampton Guildhall. It looks like a sort of Masonic temple or something. It's Chris. Reminds me of the Stonecutters.
Lovely
from the
carpeted floor, I found.
Yeah, interesting choice, actually, I thought. Yeah. I mean, it is the most reflective room in the world. It's all just white tiles. So I think the carpet at least
They're making an effort.
Yeah, they're trying at least, yeah. You know. But yeah, crazy. And then we did like a weird, like, round concert hall in Brighton. It's wacky rooms on the yeah.
What, like full crowd around you?
No, sorry. The room was round, but there was a stage at the end. Yeah, I've never actually done that.
No, me neither.
It seems crazy.
Super jealous. Yeah, I was going, what the fuck?
Only that I feel like that's only reserved for like Jay-Z and like every new metal video from the early 2000s. They always played it around, didn't they?
Massive comedians are good at doing round.
I've seen Kevin Hart do that. Yeah,
really.
That's funny.
Dean Cook was the first one, I think.
How do they like? How do they?
Is you constantly moving, like
you just keep moving around.
Yeah, looking. Okay. I think with comedy, it's like, whereas when you front in a band, it's a bit more personal. Like you catch somebody's eye, you're like in that fucking moment. You're singing, they're singing your words or whatever. That's a moment. But with comedy, I think it's just a fucking. Oop, I'll do. You've had an look over here for 2 seconds. Look over here for 2 seconds. Like, turn over.
I mean, to be fair, that it's a lot more one-sided comedy. Like you said, like live music is very. There's a real exchange between audience and especially in the world that we occupy, it's very much like participation is encouraged, whether it's moshing or crowd surfing or singing or whatever it is. But with comedy, it's like, don't get involved. Stay out of it.
I'm going to need an hour of you.
Watch me talk for 60 minutes.
This isn't a conversation. This is one-way show. Yeah.
Have you ever seen like anybody heckling at a comedy show before?
Yeah. I've seen a couple, but it just doesn't land well.
I've never seen I never think what do people think the outcome is good. It's like they've never heard of a comedy show before and they're like, I've got this idea, I'm gonna yell at the comedian, I bet this will be great.
I tell you what's funnier, the punchline I've just come up with. I think
me,
you wanker, hey, I got him Dave, I got him Steve, what are I gonna like, it's just, why would you, they've all got to be a bit pissed up, I think, to just have the fucking balls to be like, I'm going to take on this fella who's been doing this for a while.
Whose job it is to
make people laugh. Like you're doomed. You're doomed. Don't do it. Like,
it's so uncomfortable.
What's the equivalent of that, though? Is YouTube comments on music videos?
I mean, we... one of our first... Oh, no, actually, it wasn't this band. It was the band I used to be in before, Boston Manor. It's like a local band. And we did a few gigs like in just like little pubs. And we got like heckled by like old blokes at the bar before and stuff. And I was probably like 15 at the time. I'm like, what the fuck do I say to this like 50-year-old bloke, bald guy, trying to watch football and we're playing fucking shit metalcore? That was super uncomfortable. And I didn't really have a response then. So I just call him a twat and just carry on. And then he called me a twat. Yeah. No, you shut up. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah. I've got a microphone. Yeah. I'm going to get a microphone. I'm trying to give him a microphone.
He's like, there's four people in this room. They can all hear me anyway.
Yeah, I got a microphone. I got a microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Just hear me.
This room is the size of a living room. Like you don't need a microphone anyway. Yeah. But, oh, God, I don't miss that.
Is it quite refreshing, though, coming to do tours like this now with bands that the fan base isn't necessarily ones that cross over and you are winning more people over in terms of, because you've been doing this a while now, you've toured with a lot of bands that are in this kind of UK alternative scene, but to go with a band who have inspired a lot of people and, again, an audience, it might be slightly different. Is it quite like a challenge for you guys? Is it quite exciting when you have something different like this?
I think we've been a bit spoiled over the last few years and just always playing like sick shows. Like, not that these haven't been sick, it's just very different. And I think that's partly because we've kind of either been playing to our own crowd or essentially our own crowd anyway. You know, there's so much crossover with some of the bands that we've toured with that it's just like one big like home match for every band on the bill. But this has been cool because it's like away days. It's kind of people that genuinely have never heard of your band, but they've been really cool and engaging and just like, you know, watching it, kind of getting involved and buying merch and shit. So hopefully we are making new fans, but it definitely is that kind of thing where you're like, oh yeah, you know, I can't just hold the mic in the air and expect everyone to sing the words back. I've actually got to put in... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Not what it was.
I've actually got to do my job and try. Not that I give it 110% every night. But yeah, it is cool to kind of be having to think of new things on the spot and ways to engage people and really kind of be in the moment.
Have you had any heckles on this tour?
Just from my own bandmates. That's been it, really.
What they say.
You come and see every gig we do, you chicken cow.
Yeah. What's the worst thing that the other band's members say to you?
Well, their kind of pet name for me is Dog Shit Henners. What? And it has been for like 10 years. I don't know why. No? But they'll just refer to me quite passively just as dog shit. I won't even be in the room. Exactly. But it's a funny story actually with this is that George kind of came up with it, our drummer, and it kind of came back to bit him in the ass once because we one day we all got verified on Twitter, our personal Twitter accounts, however many years ago.
How was that? Is that a management thing?
Probably. The Twitter gods just bestowed us with their grace. But we were like, oh, I'm verified. Are you verified? Yeah. George's like, fuck's sake, I'm not verified.
Are you Jordan? I don't even know.
this is it. So he's like, I'm not verified. And we're like, there must be a mistake. Let's have a look at your phone. Jordan, it's because you've changed your Twitter name to Dog Shit Henners. And he was like, what? I thought it was funny. It's like, well, they don't know who you are. They're obviously not going to, it's just a random person. So he didn't get verified. That day he changed his name back to Jordan Pugh. And he didn't get verified for like 3 years. But fair play to him. He stuck to his guns on this because when he got verified, the same day he changed his name back to Dog Shit Henners again.
I thought they could take verification away if you do that.
Oh yeah, no, it's like a knighthood. It's never leaving. Yeah. Maybe they can. I mean, I guess they'd have to like de-platform.
Yeah, it's all a weird thing. But Henry, we wanted to do one with you on your own because obviously you've been on the podcast a few times before in different situations at festivals and stuff. But like, I really wanted to get into some of your personal insights behind Boston Manor. Now, as I mentioned, the band's been going quite a few years now, multiple records. You've done many tours, headlining some of your favorite bands. But just with the way music is up and down in a lot of things and the UK alternative scene having a big boom lately, where do you see Boston Manor in terms of not fitting in, but just a place in alternative music these days? Because I feel like you've had a lot of ups and downs with kind of releases during the pandemic and then having to come back from that and a lot of things being kind of pushed down. So like, if you can you just kind of explain to you where you see Boston Manor now in 2022?
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting one. I think you summed up pretty well. Like our kind of biggest record was our second album, and it kind of created a lot of opportunities for us, and things kind of like did this, went up for us in a lot of ways. And then, you know, we followed up with this record, and then we're all gearing up to go. And then, you know, the 2 weeks, I think, before, or 3 weeks before, we're due to off on this big headline tour, and the day the album comes out, everything shuts down. And you know, it definitely throws the brakes on, and it's quite a weird record anyway. So it's quite a sort of, it's kind of challenging in certain aspects. So it definitely kind of put us in a weird sort of situation. We were kind of like changing labels as well. It was the last record on that contract. So it did feel that when we kind of came out with the EP and this record, that it was a bit of a, it felt like a return to form, which is weird because we never went anywhere. Like nothing happened. Like we didn't kind of like, you know, we came back to do like a sold out tour. Like there was nothing that necessarily went in the opposite direction, but it just kind of felt like we've been in limbo for a long time. And it just kind of felt like we sort of had treaded water for 3 years and not done anything, even though we've been working constantly, which was really weird. But it's really cool now. It does feel like we've taken this huge kind of step up with this new record, and things are getting kind of crazy now. We're getting some very wild offers from people and doing some really kind of mad shit that we never thought we'd get to do. But I think now it's about just kind of trying to keep this focus. So we're doing this part two to Datura, which we're working on at the moment, that's going to probably come out next year. And it's just about kind of keeping that quality control and being just kind of very deliberate with everything that we do. And I think what you mentioned about the alternative scene is interesting because it is having this huge boom, but it is also sort of very, there's like lots of different pockets to it, but it's kind of all coming over this kind of wider umbrella. And we've always been a band that's sort of been a little bit awkward to kind of slot into place. And I don't mean that as like a kind of like, oh, because we're so edgy and weird. It's just we've never quite had that kind of, we've kind of been the kind of awkward kid at the party in every kind of mini scene that we've kind of traveled through. So, you know, the pop punks thing, and then we've toured with like Knock Loose before and shit, you know what I mean? So it's we've always kind of been like a little bit kind of had appeal to some people in the room, but it's always kind of a little bit awkward. So I think now it is interesting to see where that'll go. We're definitely embracing our kind of awkwardness and just being like, well, we're our own thing, and we're trying to be our own thing, which I'm very proud of. But you know, that doesn't always help you when you're looking at, well, who is a band that makes sense to tour with to expose us to new audiences. I think this is a good one for the record, but we're now kind of looking at, you know, mainstream acts that have kind of offered us stuff, and it's kind of like, well, when do you, because you can only tour markets so many times a year before you overexpose yourself. So we're now having to be like, we kind of get one support tour, and you kind of have to pick the right one and make sure that it's right, you know, because you're gambling. You could get there day one and be like, this is going to be the perfect tour. Like, kids are going to love us, and we're going to make loads of new fans. And you just misjudge the demographic completely. And you're like, shit.
Any shows or tours like that where you've been, you felt awkward and...
Yeah, over the years, yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, in some ways, this is a different demographic to what I thought it would be, but it's not been a bad thing. It's been, I thought it would be more, I don't know what I thought actually, thinking about it, but it's definitely sort of not exactly what I thought it'd be. I thought there'd be more immediate crossover than there was, but that's probably just because I like Alexis on Fire a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I like my band. Yeah. And Alexis on Fire.
Yeah.
But I think it's doing us really well, because I think, you know, we've had a lot of positive feedback. It's hard to measure these metrics, but you know, gaining a lot of followers and things like that. So I do think it is benefiting us. For our band, I think it can feel a little bit overwhelming at times. Like we're spinning a lot of plates at the same time and trying to sort of like chart the right course through our career. But I think now the kind of the North Star for us has been to just really focus on the music and the creative side of it all, and the rest will hopefully fall into place. I think that's kind of what we're kind of really setting our sights on now, is just making sure we write the best music and keep challenging ourselves creatively, doing and all the other cool shit that's not just the music, you know, just like interesting video is an interesting ways to kind of keep people and even ourselves engaged. You know, it's part of the wider world of the art itself, not just the music that lives in it, you know. And I find that really gratifying. So it's not a chore to do that. I'm thinking about shit all the time and it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you're kind of embracing that awkward side of the band and not trying to just fit in with what's cool, because I think a lot of people kind of get lost in that. You'll see a trend, you'll see someone being successful, trying to follow that. It seems 100%. Like you're just trying to embrace the little quirks you all have as a band.
Yeah, I mean, if we'd have gone out there in 2018 and made like a absolutely sugary pop punk banger album, we probably would be like double the size we are now, but we wanted to make weird northern Nine Inch Nails alt rock instead. But you know, that's what gets you out of bed in the morning at the end of the day, isn't it? But yeah, but I also think you see, I mean, I'm sure over your careers you'll have seen this a lot, bands that kind of trend hop and not even bands, like all artists that just try and sort of, oh, this is big now and I'll jump on it. And one, that's lame anyway, because it means that you don't really have your own contributions to the landscape. But it also kind of means that it never even works if that's what your goal is, because you're always going to be 2 years behind or a year at the earliest behind whatever that thing that you're trying to rip off is. Like, unless you're able to like fucking record it same day and put it out on Bandcamp, like how are you gonna, you're always gonna seem like a bit stale. But I don't know, I've never really understood that sort of, well, we'll try this now and we'll try that. I mean, there's trying things because what interests you and being experimental, but just kind of like, it feels a bit pin the tail on the donkey sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just sort of
yeah.
A bit blind.
You mentioned being creative constantly within the band, and this new record now, it's less than what people would see as a full track listing. There's less than 10 songs, and you said that you're going to do a part two later on in the year. What was the kind of thought process behind that? Was it not wanting to do a quote-unquote full record, or is it just kind of you like the idea of different shades to these songs? Can you walk us through it?
It's quite natural, really. It was conceived as a dual concept from the outset, and we had this idea of, I when we started writing a couple of songs, we kind of knew what the subject matter was going to be. I was kind of exercising some pretty personal sort of demons, so to speak, and it was part of me kind of, I've been doing a lot of self-care over the last kind of 18 months, and I kind of wanted to like write about that. And I've never been a particularly personal lyricist. I really get freaks me out a little bit, actually. And a lot of the bands I listen to are a bit cryptic, you know, Deftones and stuff. It's not very sort of on the nose lyrically. But I you know, I kind of wanted to try that, and I thought it would be a bit therapeutic in doing so. And it really was. But the part two kind of requires me to actually do the work and get a bit, but you get better with my mental health and all that kind of stuff. So it felt a bit disingenuous to write that, you know, hopefully this is how I'll feel in a year's time. But also we kind of had this whole idea of it being like a nighttime record, and it's chronological. It ends as the dawn breaks, and then part two begins at dawn, kind of thing. So it kind of, we already had this concept in place, and we kind of wanted to write a shorter record because we kind of wanted it to be listened to as an album. Yeah. In kind of the streaming age, obviously, you know, we talk about it all the time. I'm sure every interview you do, you guys talk about stuff like this, but you know, it's not something that is exactly pushed as a way to listen to a record. And you know, people are busy, but we thought 7 tracks, 27 minutes, that's kind of it's a commute. It's you know, cooking dinner kind of thing. And you could digest it all in one sitting. But you know, by the end of this sort of larger record that we're making, you know, you'll have yourself a double album. It'll be, you know, minimum 14, but probably something like 20 songs. So it will be a longer record in eventuality, but for the time being, it's just kind of a way to sort of focus on smaller concepts and give them kind of a bit more limelight and just be creative with the format. Because I feel like you at the moment is either big fuck off album, or I'm a pop artist that just drops singles to playlist. There's no kind of like middle ground between that. And we thought this was like a fun way to nice. To kind of do that.
Clever. I like it. How was the writing changed since the last record, would you say? Or has it? Or
a bit, yeah. Because we obviously started writing in the pandemic, so we had to kind of get used to writing on Logic and sending it across to each other and stuff. So there was less writing in the same room, but we kind of get it to like 70%, and then we usually get in the studio and start like proper making it a real song kind of thing. So it wasn't too different, but
will you keep writing like Anne now? Will you keep sending each other stuff by Logic and writing like that?
I think so, yeah. Because I'm not very good at coming up with stuff on the spot. Like, it takes me quite a long time to come up with stuff. So having that kind of like, just my, I've got a studio room in my house at home. So just being able to just kind of sit there for a few hours and just
listen to it all.
You're not like worrying about coming across as cringy, and you can you can do that really awful lyric and sing it out and be like, oh, that sucks, I'm glad no one heard that.
Just me.
Yeah. But yeah, so, but yeah, no, it is cool. And they come over to mine, I come over to theirs. I live in Manchester, so I'm about an hour away anyway, so it's quicker that way. It saves me driving up and down every day. But yeah, I think it's cool, man. I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to make, you know, I talked to some of the Bring Me guys about them making a record entirely remotely, like recording it remotely, and I don't know how people do that. Like, kudos to them, but I don't think I could do that. It sounds exhausting.
Yeah, I feel like I'd need I'd need a friend. Like, I need somebody to be like, relaxing.
Good job, Sean.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'd just be like, bro, it's all right. They're like, whoa, that is way off key. Relaxing, that's fucking awful. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I can't hear it. So, yeah, but that's how I'd have to do it.
It's a collaborative thing, though, isn't it, making a record? It'd be weird to just do it on your own. And I would go mental for sure.
Lyrically, now, do you find it more inspirational to kind of find concepts to write about rather than some of the earlier albums where it's just picking bits of your life and little stories you've had? Like, how would you explain that? Because I know, for example, on the first record, one of the biggest hits is a story about one of your childhood friends kind of getting back in touch with you after being in prison and all this kind of stuff. So is it still mixing those elements, or do you like to focus on one certain overall writing theme now?
Yeah, it's a tough one, that, because this record is so conceptual. It did feel a bit, there's the odd song that kind of like fits into the narrative a little bit more loosely, and it's kind of drawing from other places. And I was trying to tread that line of not being disingenuous to the overall project concept. You know, if you have a whole record that's about kind of like addiction, and you got this one song about, you know, a fucking sick night out you had, it or something completely random.
Puppies.
It might seem a little bit random, but I think it's a tough one to answer that, because I think time will tell whether that proves to be the case. I think I like always having that one surface level of kind of ambiguity to give you that creative flexibility, and also not to just be like, this is what the song's about, and if you don't relate to this, then fuck you. Like, I like people being able to kind of attach their own experiences to stuff, and because when you send a song out into the world, it kind of belongs to, it doesn't belong to you anymore, it belongs to everyone else. So I think I always struggle with having to pin down lyrical concepts, not because I don't know what I'm writing about, but the hardest thing is like kind of explaining to people what a song is about.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when people want you to do like a line for line kind of situation, you're like, well, sometimes I believe in sort of quite visceral writing, where if you have an overall concept and there's a lot of the lyrics are very literal, and then you'll have a few lines that just evoke a kind of atmosphere that support that atmosphere of the song. It doesn't translate to a direct, like, you know, let the pink light up your eyes. It's a lyric on our new song. It's pretty words, you know, it's a love song, you know, but it's not like, well, what pink? And where's that light source coming from? And whose eyes?
The singer songwriter.
Yeah.
Who did the album with Dallas Green? Should have been called Colour and Colour.
Nice.
Should have been called Colour and Colour.
Yeah, of course it should have.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to wait to see him. I saw him walk past just now and I was like,
Dallas!
I've only heard.
Dallas!
Should have been called Colour and Colour, shouldn't it? Fuck's sake.
Should have done, yeah. That's great.
But I think you're right, where once you put music out, it's interpreted so many different ways to every person. Like, is there ever been a story you've heard about someone who's picked up a song of yours and been like, oh, well, I got this from it. And you're like, well, that's not what it's about. The other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Hey, I went and killed 12 men after one song because it says in the songs. So I don't know. I just thought it.
Thank God someone's finally writing about the Soviet Revolution because, no, I don't know. We all the time, you know, people will kind of be like, is it about this? And you'll be like, no, but that's cool. I mean, usually. I've not had anything super weird. I mean, the big one is Laika. People are like, oh, you wrote about the dog. I'm like, no, it's just a line. Like, the line is just a simile, like, as only as Laika. The whole song is about being a shit partner and just abandoning someone that you care about all the time to go fuck off around the world. But that one lyric, people got so into it. And I actually, this morning, had a message from like someone that's making an animal rights documentary. And I was like, I mean, I'm all for that, obviously. But like, I just don't think I need to be in this documentary because I wrote that one song about, that's not about a dog at all.
Line. Yeah, so it's got one line that mentions a dog.
Oh, wow.
And dog.
I love that. I love that. Rewinding to kind of like the really early days and you finding music and everything, like I've always find it interesting when you talk about things you're into or your influences, because I feel they're so separated from each other. Like I know you're a massive Nine Inch Nails fan, like Deftones, you're all huge on The Simpsons. Like, where did that all come from to then become Boston Manor? Because I feel like you do incorporate all those bits in different ways. Like if it's from merch or if it's like little things or production of a song, and they're not kind of just, you know, you're into your pop punk and stuff like that, but it's not just, oh, you loved Blink and then you've done a pop punk band. So was there a moment in particular where you realized like, oh, well, it's okay if we take all these different things, and if I like a rap song, we can take this or we can do that?
That's a really cool question. Yeah. I never even thought about it like that, but there is this kind of weird canon of our band that exists of just like random bits of culture that we're all just into and we talk about all the time. I think from the onset of our band, I kind of met up with the brothers and we talked about forming a band, and Mike was wearing this like Ghost of a Thousand shirt, and I was like, fucking love Ghost of a Thousand. I didn't really know them that well, like the brothers that well at the time. And then we just kind of sat down and just talked about like, for like 3 hours, just talked about like bands and movies and stuff. And we're all just big, like, you know, we're big movie heads, big into like lots of different TV shows and stuff. And also you spend, you know, half of your life together for a decade, as it will be soon, which is crazy. And you kind of start to develop, you know, all these mutual interests. We introduce each other to stuff and we watch stuff together, listen to stuff together. So you kind of all become like a bit of a creepy sort of hive mind.
So many jokes that only you guys get that you pop up and it's
so annoying.
What the fuck are they on?
But it's funny how we wrote people in along the way. So our tour manager, Griff, who's been with us now for like 6 years, describes Boston Manor as a cult of personality. And we just sort of end up kind of picking up crew members and waifs and strafes along the way who just end up picking up this weird canon and lore of Boston Manor and start quoting jokes that were there for 5 years before they even joined the group. Do you know what I mean? It's just a fun little thing. But I think it's just about trying stuff as well. Like I don't think we've always been great at not freaking out about things that might be a bit scary creatively. You know, there'd be a lot of times when we'd be like, well, I don't want it to sound like this. And it's like, well, we haven't made it yet. You don't know what it sounds like. And it's only in the last kind of sort of from Glue onwards that we started to kind of trust each other a bit more and just be like, well, so we're working on this track now that is going to be a song on the next record. That's, I don't know if it's going to be an interlude yet or like an actual like full song. But it comes from, like, the inspiration comes from this, like, sort of ambient techno track. But it's, I one time I never would have shown them that because they would have been like, you want to make a techno song? We're not a techno band. But now I can say, well, I just want the warmth of the low end of that synth and the way that it makes you sort of feel like it's like warm water. And I trust now that they'll get where I'm coming from and not freak out. And we've developed that kind of language and way of communicating creatively, which I think only can come from just years of playing together.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice. With like the Simpsons merch as well. If you ever like, if they ever reached out with like cease and desist,
no. And they're trying to do more. I'm like, guys, I think we played our Simpsons cards a bit too. Like, I think we're Simpsons out. But they're like,
Matt Groening is just sitting there going, one more fucking t-shirt from that band. One more.
Try it. Just fucking try it. Yeah, we were joking actually that Balenciaga have like a Simpsons t-shirt and we were like, do you reckon they just didn't even tell them either? Just tried.
Surprised
it.
With them. What the fuck? Yeah. What are they thinking about lately? It was some of the clothes fucking Balenciaga.
Oh, fucking hell.
I think they're doing it literally as a joke, like as a troll. Like, you see when there's like, they're selling a fucking £2,000 jacket and it's full of holes or fucking wellies with fucking water already in them or some mad shit like that.
I think it's a bit like, you know, when people get a bit older and a bit more out of touch and they're like, we need to be shocking.
Yeah.
It's all got to be crazy. It's got to kind of like cause a bit of controversy. Like they're definitely, I always think for that kind of stuff, you know, like, do you watch Peep Show? You know, when like Jeremy and Subhans are always just pitching ideas and they don't really know what they're talking about. Like
but just because it's wild.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
That's what that feels like to me.
Somebody 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night's going, right then, big shoes.
Biggest shoes you can find. Make them bigger.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Orthopedic, but bigger. Yeah. Fucking
Gum shields. Yeah. We're doing gum shields.
2 caravan for shoes. Do 2 caravans separately. For, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Drugs are definitely involved.
It's
yeah.
fucking mad shit, isn't it? But yeah, a part of me thinks it's also a genius marketing plan because people go, look at this fucking brand. They're making all this bullshit.
We're talking about it right now.
And then you go and check out their other stuff and they might have some in here, but it's everything's fucking £500 to even look at, I think. T-shirts start at £500. No, so yeah, no. it's just madness to me. But part of it, I think, is madness, but also genius because it's got, again, we're talking about it now. Aren't we? So.
No, but I also think there's a weird culture in like fashion where brands almost have like a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy whereby you get these like boutique t-shirt companies that sell like you say t-shirts for like £500 and no one's ever heard of it, but because it costs that much, people go, that's good then, and then people start buying it. It's a really weird culture. I don't know. I used to be like more into fashion than I am now, and I think I obviously have never fucking had nearly enough money to buy that kind of shit, and I'm not into that anyway, but even like higher end streetwear I was always like really into. Ash is dead into it and Dan is as well. And then I kind of got to the point recently where I was like, no, look, no shame on spend your money on whatever the fuck you want, right? But from my perspective, people can't fucking heat their homes. They can't feed the kids. And it's like, even if I had that money, why do I need to spend it? Like, I'm big into trying to look drippy, cheap as fuck. Yeah. I'm into that. Like,
oh, yeah.
The thrift chic is a vibe. But I do think, yeah, I just don't know. I think it's become a bit gauche, a bit tacky to kind of... to just do the whole, like, I see them sock shoes that they have, the ones that look like socks, those Balenciaga things. I see people now at the fucking bus stop just covered in mud wearing them shoes. I'm like, are you mental?
Yeah, but I think what's happened there is thousands and millions of knockoff pairs.
They've got to be right. Yeah, I was thinking that it's got to be
because I'm pretty sure they sell them in Merthyr Tydfil High Street, and Merthyr Tydfil High Street has no big brand shop. So
believe it or not, Balenciaga didn't open a flagship store in Merthyr Tydfil. Oh.
Okay. Do you know what they should do? Because that would fit the brand perfect. Like, all these scuffed shoes, fucked up shoes. Put your fucking big store in the fucking most fucked up town you can find. Yeah. Chuck it in the middle of Merthyr.
Yeah, it would be.
That'd be so good.
That.
Next to Greg's. Greg's, yeah. Balenciaga. E. There you go. Shoes, spelled incorrectly. SHOOZ.
Vape shop. Balenciaga, vape shop.
So many vape shops in Merthyr town centre. It's fucking unbelievable.
Oh, God. It's when you know that the end times are near when the vape shops move. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of vape shops where I live.
Yeah. Our town centre now in Merthyr is just literally everything's a vape shop. They've just got rid of the last.
What was that?
Someone get murdered in the background.
Someone just did a really big yelp in the next room, it sounds like. So
it was like a soundbite of someone being kicked in the balls and 2 rooms away.
Yeah, we've just got rid of our last vegan shop. That's down.
Sad.
Yeah, it's now being replaced by
a slaughterhouse.
Close. The 9th fucking typical cafe. Is it all? There's 9 cafes in Merthyr that all sell the exact same breakfast, right, over and over again. I don't know how someone starts a new one and it gets successful.
I always think this. It's always, for me, in Blackpool, it's always a sandwich shop. And I'm always like, Doris, bless her, some day it's just going, I've got it. I've fucking got it.
I've got
it. Do you know what I'm going to open? Get this. A sandwich shop.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell sandwiches.
All right. Where are you thinking about marketing it? Well, I was thinking about opening one next to the other sandwich shop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the difference going to be? Well, man, we better because I'm making them, innit?
Yeah. But that's the thing. With vape, like, how come the fellas who own the vape shops ain't going, there's another 200 vape shops on this street?
But they fucking smash, so... People love vaping now. I mean, same with phone shops. I always think that, like...
But what I found with all these vape shops when you see them around city centres and stuff is when you walk past them, there's normally just one fella with a beard at the far end of the shop smoking a massive vape on his own. And that seems to be it. And every time I walk past them, there's never anybody else in here. But they're all doing well.
I always wonder what vape guy's life is like. Like, what's he doing? Where's he been? What's he seen? What led him there?
Like comic book guy from Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
vape guy like.
Yeah, it kind of is that, isn't it?
Jake's like a super nerd of vape. Like, you come in and go, can I have the grape elf bar? And he's like, oh, the elf bar. Okay, check out my Vapotron 69,000.
It's always the shape and size of a microwave with an exhaust on the end.
Yeah, we know that. I've got like a little fucking vape.
pen or whatever, and I just want to go, because I know you look like a twat when you vape, so I just go as quick as I can.
Yeah, discreet. That's the move, yeah.
And he's looks like a fucking giant remote control and a radio at the same time.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
I don't get it.
I think these, because fucking, I every morning when I'm off tour, I
open a vape shop.
I vape. No, I walk my wife to work with a dog. We live, there's one long road between our house and her work. And there's a high school in the middle. I walk to work and then I carry on walking, walk the dog, blah, 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 and come back. And then pretend I have a real job and shit, which I don't. And I walk past this school and it's at like when everyone's getting to school time. So I see like fucking 500 kids walking past me, blah, blah, blah. And they're all vaping. These like little kids are just like the big fucking scary Frankenstein vapes. They're all ripping on them, all those elf bar things. And I'm like, your lungs haven't developed. Your brain definitely hasn't developed. Like, I mean, I can't talk. I used to get up to all sorts when I was a fucking teenager. But surely, like, people are saying it's better for you than six.
I think it's genuinely getting younger. My girlfriend's seven-year-old nephew the other week asked his mother could have a vape for Christmas.
Oh, no.
Everybody's got them.
Crazy.
You stopped me from vaping in front of me. Now you shit. Now I'm gonna have to.
Oh, like, yeah. He was that's scary. 7 years old.
Seven.
Yeah, you can't be doing that.
I'll be on the heroin next, don't
I? Oh god.
Be on the old black tar now in no time.
I love a random tangent on this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's what it's all about. Though.
Yeah, I know. It literally is. But as we start to kind of wind down here before you go and play a rock show, you've mentioned just kind of writing and kind of come into terms with your mental health. And I think that's something we always want to bring up on here where we can, is just the kind of coping mechanisms and how people kind of day to day can kind of work on themselves. Has there been anything you've noticed that's really benefited you or worked for you or any kind of thing like that?
I have dyspraxia as well. So I'm quite like, organization is a real difficult thing for me. And if my life isn't organized, my thoughts aren't organized. So I try and, have everything kind of listed that I need to do for the day and like keep a pretty rigorous calendar and shit. And then exercise is a good one. But I think, I mean, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because it ends up sounding like you're sort of talking in platitudes, but they are all like real and helpful. But, you know, talking to people is a huge, huge thing. Like I actually had therapy in the pandemic, which was really, really, really helpful. It changed my life. I cannot recommend it enough. But one of the things that she said to me at the start of these sessions, she was like, the things I'm going to tell you aren't going to be things that you didn't already know. It's not going to be this like kind of amazing bestowment of knowledge that suddenly cures it all. It's just about contextualizing things you already know to help you kind of figure out how to implement that into your own life, you know? But I'm trying not to drink too much and stuff. You know, I'm doing this whole tour dry and I've been really enjoying that. I'm never really like a drunk on stage, but you know, you have a beer or two before you go on. I've been enjoying just kind of the rawness of just being. So, I mean, I've been doing that for about six, 8 months now, but just being sober as fuck on stage, it's kind of sick. I'm a convert. And
just, I went the other way because I started like when I started in the blackout, I was straight edge from 18 to 28.
So wow, really?
Yeah, so when I was in the blackout, I remember the first time being pissed on stage.
Really?
Yeah, I drank two, here we go, my first drink. 2 pints of Tia Maria.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like a mad fucker.
Straight?
Yeah, well, just in the pint. I had one on stage. Nobody would use it. You need water, like you need a liquid, because Tia Maria is thick. It's like,
yeah, it's like using yogurt.
Cream. Yeah. Terrible. What a fucking idiot.
That's like, wild.
Probably where the black are not together anymore. But we played in Paris. We played in Paris. I just remember I fucking finished the second one. I was like, oh, fucking hello. And I just remember some girl going, I love you, Sean. And I just said, I love you, bitch.
Oh,
I'm going to stop doing this. I'm never doing this again. Like, it was like instantly, I love you, bitch. Hey! Oh, well, that's it. And I don't think I ever got, yeah, after that, I was never drunk again after that on stage.
Really?
But yeah.
Yeah.
Probably for the best.
I've never really been sort of like really drunk on stage. Maybe once years ago, but it definitely is a weird thing as well, because you could even have like a couple of pints and it becomes a bit ritualistic. Some of the guys, they'll have like two drinks, these drinks before the shows, whatever, and that's it. But if you haven't eaten all day, I haven't eaten all day today.
Have you not?
No, I haven't eaten anything today. Wow. So I need to go and get some food after this. But if I was like, oh, we're on a bit of a bevy, like, and I had a completely empty stomach, that would affect me a lot a lot compared with if I just was in normal mode where I had a couple of beers, eating three meals a day. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I think for me, alcohol is just sort of, I grew up in like a drinking culture in a town where there was not very much to do and got into it. I figured out the other day, I'm 30 next year, so I will have been drinking for half my life. You know, I used to be on the park fucking 15. Probably would have been vaping if it was around then, you know. It becomes sort of so normalized. And then I think only sort of over the pandemic, I recently sort of realized it's really not healthy because I'm in an environment where it's just everywhere all the time. It's free. It's available. It's the only job in the world where you turn up to work and they're like, and here are your beers for the day, sir.
Here's a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I will. Thank you very much.
Imagine that if you worked in like an office. And of course, your rider for the day. Yes. It's your Tia Maria.
Yes, sweaty meat and cheese. Get it on me.
What? No hummus.
Temperature, please.
No hummus.
No, oh, there's always hummus. Yeah,
sometimes I do a rider special just to make myself like feel at home when I'm on tour. When I'm nice. All the way around. When I'm at home, not on tour. I'll do like hummus, sliced cheese, crisps.
Yeah. Bread. Don't delicious. Forget where you fucking
delicious. Classic. Yeah. But yeah, I think just kind of keeping sort of control of, and it's things like, you know, it affects your sleep and everything. I mean, I'm not saying people need to stop drinking if that's what they enjoy, but for me, I definitely kind of realized I was like, and I wasn't getting like wildly out of control drunk or anything. It was just sort of like you kind of feel it creeping up on you. And I kind of realized, I was like, I think I do this a bit more than I should. And I think that my head isn't altogether where it should be. And I think kind of curbing this will help. And it's everything. It's loads of little things, isn't it? It's always that. Whenever there's a problem in any walk of life, I always find it's usually like a combination of a few small things.
Yeah, it's never just straightforward one. Oh, whoa, drinking's gone. Everything's fucking wicked
bing,
again.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, exactly.
No, it's not. But yeah. But then also, like you said, like you came from a culture of drinking and stuff. And I think that's a problem, is like a lot of people come from, I come from Merthyr Tydfil, 2008's third roughest town in Britain. It's these shitholes. Like, people come from these places, and that's literally all the people before them know.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
I remember when the Black first started touring, like, coming back home, and I'd go to the pub just to see my friends, and I wasn't drinking or whatever. And you'd see them, and they're fucking drunk. You look down the bar, and there's a father doing the exact same motions they do. And you're like,
yeah,
oh my God, this is generation. Like,
100%.
Oh my God, you're singing fucking Delilah by Tom Jones. Yes, exactly what your dad was doing 2 weeks ago. Like, it's just, it all seems like this fucking thing. And then you kind of get out and then you see the bigger world or whatever. And then you know, maybe that isn't for me or whatever. But I think a lot of people in those towns need to see that for themselves, and they never do.
It's like holding a bit of a mirror up to yourself, isn't it? You can never really see the wood from the trees because you're in it. I definitely feel that way. I was talking to Mike about this literally yesterday, and I think Blackpool's like, it's so, so, I mean, we've talked about this on other episodes that we've done together, but Blackpool and, like, you know, towns like Merthyr Tydfil and a lot of those kind of industrial South Wales towns, a lot in common, and it's the same thing. People just kind of are born there, they live there, they die there, and the parents do the same. And again, you know, there's nothing wrong with loving your hometown and staying in one place. If that's what you choose to, people have a very happy life, and that's absolutely fine. No judgment. But I think it is about those, like you say, sort of cycles and generational, almost like ruts that people find themselves in. And it's sort of, people never really think about, you know, what they want to do, because they never really think that there is anything to do. It's just like, well, I'll just get a job in here and pub on the weekends and probably have a kid or two, and, you know, and you know, more power to you. People have very happy lives doing that. I'm where I can seem like Mr. Man that gets to tour around the world being all smug about it. I'm not trying to do that, but I definitely think I've seen, I used to work in like the pubs and the bars in Blackpool, and I used to work in this old proper crusty old man's pub called the Vic, and it'd been open for like 100 years. And there's a fella in there called Mick, and he had no legs, probably about 75, but he looks 175. One of my last shifts there, he was like, I've come and sat in that seat every day since I was 19. And I was like, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. But he said it with like pride, like, you know, I love this place and I love this town and these are all my pals. And you know, I'd see the same face in there every single fucking day. Some would get there at 11 o'clock in the morning and stay there till, you know.
Yeah. Well, closing. I used to work in Castle Bingo. And when I worked in,
did you announce the numbers?
Oh, check this out. Four of the Blackout worked in the same Castle Bingo at the same time.
No way.
Two of the both front men, me and Gavin, both worked there. Neither of us ever called the numbers, right?
Two people that are quite good on a mic, you would say.
You think you'd sounds like talking through soup. But me and Gavin didn't get allowed on the stage with the microphone. Matthew Davis, the guitarist, who was literally known as the mumbliest member of the Blackout, right? We had an in joke. Like, he's a pilot now, and our in joke is like, last thing you want to do is be on Ryanair and you're because it's Matthew and you're gonna die. But Matthew ended up being a bingo caller, and I was like, what the fuck, how's that happened? But yeah, like you said, like, the women would queue from 8:30, it would open at 9, they would queue outside the bingo from 8:30 in the morning, stay there till 9:30 at night, home, same thing next day.
Crazy. Yeah,
mental.
It is crazy.
The pension. But then again, it's like, I suppose, if you've got fuck all to do, that's the problem with a lot of these towns, is there's fuck all to do, isn't it?
So it's the thing for them to do.
Like, if you can go down there and meet all your friends every morning, and then you're with 200 friends every day from 9 till fucking 10, and then go back. Yeah. And
For them, it's their world and it means so much to them, but there's no judgment for you wanting to do something more than that. So I'm sure starting the band, that gave you an extra chip on your shoulder to want to be more than just the band from Blackpool, get out there and explore the world.
I think it's just sort of like comfort in what you know, innit? My mum, when best thing she ever told me when I was growing up, she was like, try to every day live outside of your comfort zone. And I think that's a really good piece of advice, that is to try and always do things that aren't always the routine that are safe and comfortable, because you'll expand your horizons and then that becomes your comfort zone. And you can do so much, and people always, I think, our front of house guy used to be a guitar teacher, and he would sometimes get adults and who'd come in to learn guitar, and they'd be like, oh, I can't play guitar, I could never play guitar. And he's like, why? It's like, well, you know, people my age, like, if you're not already good at guitar, it's like, you can learn guitar at 50. Like, I think there's this sort of people thinking that, well, if you don't do it as a job, as a profession, or like, you know, it's been, you're either an expert or you don't play, like, that's the goal and that's what you have to become. But you can just learn a bit of, you learn Smells Like Teen Spirit, have a bit of fun, man. Like, it's the same with everything. It's people are very scared to step outside of those comfort zones because they're afraid of being embarrassed or being uncomfortable or failing. Yeah. And failing is the best thing you can do, because,
well, that's what I think about people, like, people in bands, to me, like, I don't think I've grown up since I was 23, right?
Same. Yeah,
but I think that's what it is. It's the kid. It's the fucking, whoa, I can do fucking any, you know, we look at it and we're like, oh, well, I'm doing this now. I can fucking learn guitar if I wanted. Like, we can all still see that. But these people in these towns have been fucking hammered down by their job in the fucking meat factory or whatever, like there is in Merthyr Tydfil. They've just been hammered by it so much that, well, I couldn't possibly fucking try something new.
It's a really good point. You sort of squash down and feel ridiculous if you were to attempt to try something different.
Being forced because to be an adult.
And it's sort of the status quo, but it's a big comment on British society, I think, in that there is not very much imagination and there's very much a kind of way of doing things, and that's how you do them, and things are the way that they are. And it's interesting touring with of bands from other parts of the world and having crew members that are like American and Canadian and stuff, because you kind of see, they hold a light up to your country in a way that up to your country in a way that you've never seen it before. Yeah. I'm like, wow, it is a bit shit, isn't it? Like, this is really interesting.
Boris Johnson is a massive country.
But even like stuff that I've never been the greatest Anglophile, to be honest, but or the greatest supporter of this country and its values, but I am, you know, I've obviously very grateful that I've grown up here, but I do think that there's shit that you think is sick. I had an argument, like an actual argument the other day in the pub with one of my best friend, Ewan, one of my best friends, and he was trying to tell me that British food is amazing. I was like, it's some of the worst food in the world, Ewan. And he was like, nah, roast, fish and chips, full English, banging. I'm like, they're three things. A roast we don't own. Every country has meat and veg, so you can get rid of that for a start. Most countries do have fish and chips as well, but I'll give you that. Our national dish is a chicken tikka masala. It's not even fucking from this country. Yeah. And I was like, but what about, think how colourful like South American cuisine is, and all the different types of South Asian food, and even Middle Eastern food, and Japanese, East Asian food, and nah, fucking some best food in the world, Sunday roast. And he would not be convinced. I was like, that is so incredible to me.
I saw two old people having this argument the other day, and the guy was like, Britain, best place for food. And the guy was like, no, that's not true whatsoever, is it? And then he was like, well, come London's got the top five best restaurants in the world. And they're like, yeah, what do they serve? French food. It's not fucking British, is it?
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I found this very interesting. I know we've got to wrap things up. I didn't
think we were going to get to British food.
No, the clock bell is chiming as we're wrapping
this up.
The clock
is telling us to get going because you need to eat before you go on.
Yes, you do, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Jump on the stage. But, I mean, Henry, with all this, I mean, you've mentioned so much that you're still working on with the band.
10th year anniversary coming up.
Next year.
Yeah, yeah.
What else can you just kind of let us know about? What else is there? To Undertaker's coming out.
Yeah. That's a scary bell, that one.
What else is there to look out for? What can we expect? What's Boston Manor got planned?
Well, we're announcing tomorrow. We're doing some small headline shows in December, two weekends, just in like smaller towns people don't usually get to go to. So in Tunbridge Wells and Huddersfield and Blackpool. So we're actually in our first ever hometown show. We've never
That's
played.
Mad. You've never played.
Never played. You've never played the Empress Ballroom.
Never played. Well, we did in our live stream. Oh. So, but that didn't really count. We played Blackpool in like a sort of earlier incarnation of the band in a pub somewhere once, but we've never properly, as the band that we are now, done a hometown show.
Surely, yeah. You let headline fucking show there. At some point, there's got to be the Empress Ballroom.
We hope so.
Top of the tower.
See? Well, interesting you should say this, Sean. They have a venue. Well, there's a circus and there's a tower ballroom, but they have a venue in the tower that they've not done anything with yet. They've not opened it, but it's an academy quality 600 cap venue. So
motherfucker needs to open.
We gotta do it, right? We gotta do it. This one's a bootleg social because they're fucking the only people kind of holding it down for actual live music in Blackpool. So we wanted to do it in the venue that's been there the whole time in Blackpool. But yeah, at some point soon I want to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we've got these shows. We're going to be raising money and donations for women's shelters at these shows, trying to get toys. So it's kind of it's a toy drive. So we're trying to get toys for the kids for Christmas that are kind of living in these shelters in a really difficult time. But we'll also kind of be accepting, they will be accepting the charities in each town, monetary donations via QR codes. So that will just go straight to the charity from your phone from there. Which will be great. Hopefully make a bit of a difference. And then next year, we're touring Australia with our friends in Movements, doing a co-headliner, which we're very excited about. And then we have a couple other tours booked that are yet to be sort of announced, which is some exciting stuff. But the main thing for us is going to be working on part two. We're also playing Slam Dunk Festival, which is probably being announced by the time this podcast comes out, I think it's next week.
These 2 weeks, and
this next week coming, they're announcing it, so that'd be really sick. Always love playing that; it's just fucking great, isn't it? I'll probably see you two then. So we got a lot planned for next year. It's gonna be a really busy year for us, but hopefully by the end of next year, there'll be part two to this record out into the world.
Awesome. And,
the new
excited for it all.
I can't wait, man.
It's been great to see you, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a lovely time, and I'm excited for the show, and we'll catch you soon.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Cheers, man.
Lovely.
Awesome. Nice one.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You listen to Sapping Podcast! Wonderful!
Ooh.
Yes, thank you very much to the wonderfully beautiful inside and out Henry Cox of Boston Manor, Blackpool's finest. We had a lovely, lovely chat, as you just heard. Absolutely good egg, Morgan. What a great egg.
Yes, very good egg. Very humble, very wholesome. And it was just nice to take away some of the elements of being a frontman for a band and getting to know the insights of just his thoughts on everything. And I love it when we get to do that, have these deep, meaningful conversations with people with a lot of random tangents that go off and make us laugh, because that's what we do. But just kind of have a different look at the industry and people's personal lives, especially when we get to get in a room to do it together. So thank you again to Boston Manor and their team. Thank you to Alexis on Fire and their team and everyone at the venue at the Guildhall in Southampton for letting us do this. If you haven't, go back and listen to episode 206 featuring Wade and George from Alexis on Fire. We recorded all of that in the same day, so you get to hear the room and think if you... Oh, that is the same room. Hey, mind, I thought I had this room before.
Well, yeah. Oh my God. Surely they've recorded this in the exact room they spoke to Wade and George from Alexis on Fire. If anybody's noticed that, right? Get a life. This sounds like they might have done this in a... Fucking grow up. Grow up. I know you must be a sound engineer or something like that, but come on, man. It's about the chat, not about the fucking acoustics of the room, you shit. Imagine that. Why do you listen to Sapling Podcast? Oh, I like to try and work out what rooms they're in every week. I like to work out the shape of the room by the audio. What? This room was a tetrahedron, by the way. So work that one out.
That's the word of the week there. But Boston Manor's new
shape, I think.
Boston Manor's new album Tatura is out now. Expect a follow up in 2023, hopefully, as Henry promised. And they will be touring across the UK this December in a very intimate run of shows, where at every one of the gigs they're collecting toy donations for local women's shelters and charities in an attempt to get toys to kids in refuge centres this holiday season. So if you are heading down to a show, do what you can there. And they will be playing in Leicester starting on December the 8th, then heading to Bournemouth, Tunbridge Wells, Huddersfield, Stoke, and their hometown of Blackpool for the first time ever.
Nice. Again, just shows that I call him a good egg earlier. I couldn't be more wrong, could I? They are beautiful humans looking out for other humans. We should all be doing that. If you can spare anything, go and check out Boston Manor at those dates in some of those lovely but also terrible towns. If you've got any questions or guest suggestions or anything you want to tell us, we're not priests, so you can't really confess to us. Well, you could confess to us, but I mean... We can't abolish your sins for you. But get in touch with us at SappeningPod, at SAPPENINPOD on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. And check out patreon.com/Sappening to join our Patreon group of absolute legends and the odd bastard. So yeah, check it out, patreon.com/Sappening.
Yeah. Yeah, the community are absolutely wonderful. I know a lot of them this week are meeting up to go and watch Young Guns on tour together. So that'll be nice. If you are going to one of those shows, join the group, meet up with people, have a giant laugh. And we've just put out a bonus podcast Q&A session exclusively for our Patreon listeners at patreon.com/Sappening as well. So if you want to check out even more behind the scenes content, extra podcasts that won't be available on the usual streaming apps, come and join us and help us continue to make this each and every week. But while saying that, in the description of this episode, there are loads of people's names that we thank. But as always, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapnin Podcast Patreon community.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Janelle Caston, Paul Hirschfield, Tony, still top of the league and top of the world, Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Nathan Croshaw, Emma Barber, Mitch Perry, Scarlett Charlton, Rara, Sammy G, Kat Bess, and Dana Lazenva, Jenny Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Stuart McNaught, Stephen Aston, M. Evans Roberts, Caroline Robinson, Kate Puttick, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Carl Pendlebury, come on Aussies, come on, come on. All right. Lost last night, didn't I? Thank you very much, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Kelly Cannon, Emily Perry, John and Emma, Jason Redia, Craig the Boys are Back in Town Harris, Gary White, Kalila Keane, Adam King of the Goss Parslow, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, my boss has threatened to fire the employee with a worse posture. I have a hunch it might be me, Crisp. Ha ha ha. Thank you very much, Alice Wood, Katrina Robinson, Reese Bowring, Kate Stevenson, Kyle's Wales for the World Cup, David Smith. Oh, silly boy. And last but not least, thank you very much, Connor Lewins.
Woo!
Yes, thank you very much to all of those people, everybody in the description. If you thought about becoming part of the Patreon, go on, man. Go on.
It's a good laugh. It is go a good on. Laugh. But yeah, we appreciate literally everyone for helping us continue to make this, celebrating our 4th year anniversary last week, and everyone for listening and getting this far. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and we'll be back next week and every Friday with a very special guest to cause even more chaos with.
Aye. Probably. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
We need to get a fucking guest for next week. Oh, fuck.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.